Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call and talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. Joining us today to answer your gardening questions, a couple of familiar voices. Bob Graves is a horticulturalist and co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. He has been an avid hands-in-the-dirt gardener for some 40 years now. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Always nice to have these guys on the program. Always a popular show. There is one open line at the moment. It won't be open long. Get your calls in now. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us if you wish, voxpop at wamc.org. You can go to Facebook. It's WAMC Radio on Facebook, and there'll be a Vox Pop post there where you can comment. Or you can go to our website, wamc.org/voxpop. But we do like your calls. Well, I suppose you could tweet as well if you want. WAMC Radio, just use the hashtag VoxPop or email again, voxpop@wamc.org. But the phone number, that's the key, is 1-800-348-2551. Fred and Bob, nice to have you guys here today.
Yeah, it's nice to be here again.
Great to be back.
I guess Greg is busy.
Yes.
That's what I've heard. Vacation for him. Away.
Oh, it's vacation. Oh, good for him.
Yeah, good
well,
for
we
him.
Can't hold that against him. So how's the summer been, gentlemen?
It's been good. It's been really busy. It's hard to believe that we're actually, you know, getting ready to, you know, have a fall plant sale at the Arboretum. And, you know, it's, wow, where to go? But it's been good. It's been really good.
Things it's a clever way to get a plug in, by the way. Really nice. Really
it's
nice.
Been very spotty with the rain this year, though. We had some a dry May, and then June was wet, and then it got dry again. And it's been rain in some places and not in others. And
yep.
We're finding a lot of people having trouble with plant material because they're thinking we got enough rain, and we didn't.
Well, apparently we didn't in late July and early August. We went away for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And a couple of my sisters-in-law who are down here said, yeah, it's fine. Everything's great. We're getting plenty of rain. Well, we got home, and all the vegetable garden was just about
burned right up.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
it's been real spotty.
Yeah, it's been really odd, especially with the two big kind of drought times. That early one really hurt a lot. That was bad. It was one of the drier ones I think we've had in a long time.
In a long time.
Yeah.
And then you have El Nino allegedly lurking out in the Pacific, which may mean a warmer winter for us.
Is that what they're saying?
Well, that's what history would indicate. So that means we Northeast would get a warmer winter.
Really?
Which means what for spring, if we're looking ahead?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
well, you guys don't know.
Got to check with the...
Everything seems just more extreme now. It's like when you get rain, it's more, and when you get less, it's less.
Yeah, that's what it seems like, extreme fluctuations.
Extreme fluctuations.
When we're talking water in general, one thing to point out would be that, you know, this time of year, if it is dry, a lot of trees, a lot of plants, not only do they, especially the newly installed plants, need water, but even the ones that are all existing, the big boys, they do a lot of storage right now, and getting water down for them during this time
to
get through the winter and flush out for next year without damage. That's right. So water and less frequent deep watering.
Deep water
is better as opposed to.
Okay. Well, the phone lines are loaded. Let's go to Kerry in Plainfield, Mass. Kerry, you are first today.
Great. Hello, Ray and guests.
Hello.
What I'm calling for today is I have much hosta, various varieties on my property.
Okay.
And the property is divided in half by a gravel country road. This past month, all the hosta on one side of the road, the leaves were chewed away right down to the stems. Mm. And then on the other side of the road, all the hosta was perfect.
Mm.
And I checked for slugs and beetles. I couldn't find anything.
Typically what slugs do is they chew holes and they don't eat them down. I'm guessing deer if they were eating to the ground.
Most likely deer is what I would say. For
some
sure.
reason they're not crossing the driveway.
And it almost seemed like it happened overnight.
It could. They'll come in and just clean them right out.
Yeah. We've actually had at the Arboretum, we've had almost never have had issues with our hosta getting eating. And this year... noticed a lot of deer browse, and they
I think
did
there are a lot of deer
exactly
out there
what he said. They chewed all the leaves, and they did it within. I was like, "What?"
And did they leave the stems?
They did.
Yeah.
So that's
you know
that's
they'll come back next year.
I'm sure. It was just funny because, like I said, one side of the road they're all gone, and then on the other side of the road.
Something they didn't.
I guess they didn't want to cross
the road.
Why did he not cross the road?
Okay.
Well, thank you very
you're
much.
Welcome.
You
Thanks,
got
Gary.
It.
We appreciate the call. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. It's the gardening show for the month of August, which is already almost gone. Let's go to Shelley in Cheshire, Mass. Shelley.
Hi.
Hello,
thanks for taking my call. I bought two Alberta peach trees about 5 years ago or 4 years ago. And I had a prolific crop on one tree. not so much on the other. And then for about 3 years. And then last year I had no peaches whatsoever. And this year I just discovered there were three beautiful peaches on the one that always was very prolific. The other one, nothing. Mm. Yeah. So I don't know whether I'm doing something wrong or that's something typical to Alberta peaches. I'm not sure.
Well, did you do anything different the last few years as opposed to the first 3 years? Or pretty much everything the same, pruning the same times? And
I pruned the real heavy giver a lot, mm-hmm. and I only had the three peaches from it this year.
When did you
but
prune?
Last year, nothing.
And when did you prune the heavy?
Probably in July.
Okay, but you were pruning it, and you didn't see any peaches, obviously. You're not taking peaches off when you're pruning it, so they didn't have them.
Oh, no, no.
No, it would be probably most likely due to the last few winters have been really, really cold. Yep.
Yeah, that's not one of the hardiest peach varieties either. They're, any of the stone fruits, peaches, cherries, plums, and the like, can get hurt by the winter. The blossoms are often killed when the tree isn't. So I think it just had a couple bad winters, and it depends on what happens next year.
Yep. And the last few years have been really bad.
Really
bad.
You'll get good.
When should I feed them? In the spring, summer, and fall?
Well, typically, they always say roots before shoots in terms of feeding. So, that means basically before shoot growth, the roots are actively gathering a lot of material. So, the best time is spring prior to bud break before they actually, your buds are swelling. But they have, look around, they're deciduous plants. They're swelling, but they haven't actually opened yet. And that's a really good time to put down, fertilizer. And,
like a 12-12-12?
Well, you want to make sure it has all complete fertilizer. It doesn't always have all of the micronutrients, and you want to make sure that it has all the micronutrients as well. So complete with micronutrients, and typically, balanced is good, but not too high on the nitrogen. So balanced, as long as it has all the trace elements and micronutrients, you're going to be in pretty good shape. And you can also do fall applications as well.
Shelly, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Now, before we go on to the next call, what is 12-12-12?
Well, it's a ratio of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And in something that's a 12-12-12, there's exactly equal parts of both nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium.
Typically, don't want to get too hung up with the numbers. You get, as you say, a complete balanced fertilizer, whether it's a 12-12-12, 10-10-10, a 5-10-5.
Yep. For Pete's sake, if it's a ratio, it could be 1-1-1, right?
Exactly. It's kind of the same thing in some respects.
It's just higher amounts of it. And
As opposed to what? Filler?
Fillers and things like that.
It's a percentage by weight, too. It's a percentage by weight.
Okay. Yep. All right. Yep. Let's get another call in before the first break. Chuck in Hudson. Chuck.
Hello. How you doing?
Good.
I got two questions, but deer is like candy. The hosta is like candy to them.
Oh, yeah.
It's sickening around here. Okay.
All right.
Now, somebody told me yesterday, because I don't like to use chemicals, somebody told me that because I have a brick patio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And will vinegar kill the weeds?
Yeah.
Yeah. The vinegar, it should be just noted that the vinegar that you get at the supermarket is only about 2 or 3% pure vinegar, so it's very low. And the horticultural vinegars are actually purchased, and you can get them, you wouldn't get them at a supermarket. You'd have to go through, an online store or some other garden center that carries it. I don't know if you guys carry that kind of stuff.
We have some organic weed killers that have vinegar in
them. Vinegar-based stuff and citrus oils
and stuff. Yeah, those organics will work. It's just the weeds are going to come back a little more quickly than they would with some other
things. But vinegar, is this just a pH issue?
It's an acid.
So doesn't it kill everything then?
Well, it's a foliar burner.
Well, yeah, but he's doing it on brick. He's not doing it on. You're not going to do it over the top of anything desirable.
Okay. That's right. Yep. You do it on roadways. You do it on walkways. You do it on patios, and it will burn it.
It will work.
It works well. It doesn't kill the root directly. Right. It's a foliar burner, so know that. And then that means the root's still alive. So usually it'll regrow. But if you get right back on that and you burn the foliage a few times, well, the plant stops photosynthesizing, and hence you eventually wear the root out too. Right. And that's kind of how you want to approach those types of
products. Yesterday I was pulling out the weeds with my fingers, and it was nonsense.
Yeah.
A lot of work. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And another question.
All right.
Somebody gave me a monk's hood plant about 15 inches tall, and a deer chewed it, but I kept the bulb in the ground. Will that pop up in the spring?
Should typically, if it's enough energy stored in it, I would certainly wait. And you can use, there are a lot of organic deer repellents that are basically rotten egg, dried blood type
that.
Things, and they do work. So if you got your hosta, your monkshood, or other perennials being eaten, repellents really are pretty effective.
Yep, just reapply. You want to reapply them like after heavy rains and things like that. They will need to be reapplied. Garlic also in that concoction.
Yeah, garlic will keep the deer away?
Yeah. In fact, I've actually seen, we've used them in free samples of different things over the years at DR Breedum, these little garlic, they're called Protex. They're like these little sticks with garlic extracts in them, really strong, and you put them, hang them on plants and stuff, and then they don't get washed off like the stuff that Bob and I are talking about. It kind of stays long.
Garlic's good. If you eat a lot of garlic, you won't get ticks.
Keeps everybody away.
Yeah, you know. Ticks, people, you name it. Hey, Chuck, we got to take a break here. Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Bye now. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Yeah, it's the gardening show today. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia here, and Ray Graff. Your calls at 1-800-348-2551. More on the way.
Support comes from Washington County Tourism, announcing the Washington County Fair today through Sunday, spotlighting the county's agricultural heritage with livestock, rodeo, and more. WashingtonNYCounty.com. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, working with over 50 local farmers this summer to offer 100 locally grown products, Berkshire.coop for mission and business model. Poughkeepsie Farm Project's 8th Annual Soupa Bowl, a celebration of local soups and music and community on Sunday, October 4th, farmproject.org. Maybe Farm Historic Site, an 18th century farm on the banks of the Mohawk River, featuring interactive exhibits, talks, nature trails, and events for children and adults, Pelts and Prosperity Fur Trade Program on Saturday, SchenectadyHistorical.org. And SPAC, presenting the Saratoga Wine and Food Festival in Concord Elegance, September 11th through the 13th, featuring the Adirondack Tour Friday tasting with chefs Saturday and jazz brunch on Sunday, SPAC.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, the gardening show for August with Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and yours truly, Ray Graff. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. And Fred, what's happening at the Landis Arboretum?
This coming Friday, we have another live concert at the Arboretum Meeting House with the Million Dollar View, and this time it's going to be a blues band, Mark Emanation and Soul Sky.
Mark Emanation, fine guitar player, you know.
That's what I've heard. I can't wait to hear it. Yeah. And with special guest Mike Herman as well. And that's going to kick off 7 to 10 o'clock in the evening on Friday. And it's indoors, so it's definitely rain or shine.
Are you going to sit in with the group?
You never know what happens at those blues jams.
I'll call Emanation. So we'll I'll make him let you sit in.
And then we also have on September 19th to 20th our annual fall plant sale. Specializing in out of the ordinary trees, shrubs, and perennials, hallmark of that event. We also have a great selection of books and baked products.
What's the website?
www.landisarboretum.org.
And while we are plugging websites, Bob.
Yes, it's fadigansnursery.com.
You better spell that.
Fadigans. It's Fadegons. And it's actually Dutch. In the 16th century, it was spelled with a V. It was Vatican.
Really? And why did you?
We didn't change it, but somewhere along in the 1800s, they changed it to Vatican.
That's a shame. You got to go back to the old one. All right, let's go back to a couple of email here, and then we'll go back to the phones. Hang in there if you are on hold. Time for the glasses. Old age has hit hard here. Let's see. This is from David. I want to know if it was legal to make my lawn a desertscape with hardy plants and any advice you have. That's from David.
If it's legal?
If it's legal to make a lawn a desertscape.
I don't see why not.
You know, I've never heard that anyone got in any trouble for turning your yard into a desert.
Sometimes called a zero-scape, so it's something that doesn't use a lot of water.
Yep.
Very much the vogue in California, obviously.
Sure, huh? Obviously. Yeah. Well, I mean, you can always check zoning on that, right?
Yeah, well, a lot of it comes down to, what neighborhood you're in and what kind of pressure you get from neighbors. I know that in certain cases I've heard of people where they just don't feel like mowing lawns and they get much.
That would be a town issue.
And that becomes actually an issue, and that's an ordinance thing.
Yeah.
And, they've had them, made them mow the lawns and stuff. But I don't think there'd be an issue with that. But I could certainly check with the town if there was any question. Yeah, I'd check with the town.
All right, this one's from Joanne and Lee. Please excuse my shorthand. All right, Joanne, you're excused. Have blight in garden tomatoes. Spotty leaves, not thriving. Fruit with black bruises for 3 years. What should I do? That's from Joanne.
Oh, boy. There's lots of things going on there.
There is, for sure.
Yeah. You try, first of all, to not plant tomatoes in the same spot every year, and that's fairly common advice, but many of us don't have room to be rotating them all that much. You try to change your varieties up from year to year and use some more resistant varieties. You also want to get rid of all the old debris at the end of the year. You know, don't compost those plants. Get them out of there. Discard them so that you're not overwintering that. And then probably in the spring when you plant, start with an organic fungicide, I think, something that'll you want to use a fungicide prior to having the problems. Once you see it, it's usually too late.
But in general, this year has been better for blight, right, than past?
It's been better. Now, those things can come on the weather. I mean, they can come from out of state. It's not necessarily something that you've done in your own yard.
All right.
And sometimes those black end rot sort of things, a lot of people think are blights or fungal. They're actually water and calcium issues. So, adequately watering gardens.
Tomatoes like a very consistent moisture.
They do.
Particularly if you're in pots. Boy, they don't want to get dry and get wet.
Nope. So sometimes that's just a watering issue, and it does look like a rot. It acts like a rot, and it looks just like a fungal, but it's actually caused by water and sometimes nutrition. So balanced fertilizers that we talked about with the complete spectrum of
12-12-12
nutrients.
Or 5-5-5.
Maybe not on that.
Right. More important to have complete.
All right. One last email here, then we'll go back to the phones. This is from Mariana, and I love hearing from Pennsylvania. Mariana in Lackawaxen, Pennsylvania. Good day, gentlemen. All right.
She's being charitable.
She may be off on that. But have any of you had any experience using the Harpin protein products for disease control? Thoughts?
I have not.
I do not have any experience with that.
Do you know what they are? I've never even... I'm saying it wrong. H-A-R-P-I-N.
Harpin protein products.
Yeah.
For
not
plant
familiar
growth.
With that one.
Okay. Well, I guess that's homework for next show.
If the person wanted to email me at fred@landisarboretum.org, I could, I'm happy to research that kind of a thing and Google it and see what I can find. A lot of times, if you know what to look for when you Google, is the difference between getting bad information or not.
Maybe a different name.
If that person wants to email me, fred@landisarboretum.org.
Very wise, Fred.
I'd gladly research it for him.
Let's go to Chuck in Albany. Chuck, you're on.
Hi. I have a couple of maples on my property, a big silver maple out front and a little bit smaller one, red maple on the back. And I was wondering, the one in front is going to be due for a pruning. And I've talked to a couple of people. I know somebody who's in landscaping. He says I ought to just top it off at about the level of the roof. And then I talked to somebody else who's one of the tree service companies. He says, oh, no, don't do that, that you really shouldn't. You shouldn't top them at all. You should just prune them. What's your take on that?
Well, the facts proven through research, and I use this as a disclaimer, through the International Society of Arboriculture, which is one of the leading tree industries right now in terms of doing research. Should we do these things? Should we stake? Should we remove wire and balls when you plant things, etc.? There's no question. Topping is really bad. You do not want to top a tree. That's There's other ways to shorten a tree by doing reduction cuts, which is nothing even close to topping. Topping will either kill your tree straight up, or in some cases it will live through the topping, but it'll cause a massive amount of resprouts that are all very weakly attached to the tree and become very, very, very dangerous.
One of the things I'd ask here, Fred, is if that's a silver maple and it's near the house, I'd be questioning whether or not you really want it there, because that's a weak-wooded tree.
Yeah, it could use maybe a cable.
You got to be careful. Those things don't develop weak areas where they can fall. They're sometimes a short-lived tree, and they can be a hazard.
Huh.
Do you know what kind of tree, what kind of maple?
It's a silver maple.
It is a silver. Yep. Is it a really healthy-looking tree?
Yeah, it looks good.
Is there a reason why you're pruning it?
Well, it's starting to get some, there's branches coming out over the roof and stuff, so something.
Okay. I would start by, getting a certified arborist in there. And, I always say, it's not the only way to get a good job on, your pruning, but it's certainly a guaranteed way for the most part that the person who's going to do it is going to do it right. And also, just like Bob said, a lot of times they do form naturally codominant stems. And my guess is that your tree probably has three or four big trunks coming out of one trunk. somewhere 10 feet off the ground. If it doesn't, if it's just one straight trunk, that's better. But that doesn't mean it needs to be removed, but it does mean that that's a structural defect, and sometimes cabling is required. So I think, you know, you would start with a, you know, ideally a consult by a certified arborist, and you can go to treesaregood.com. That is a free website put out by the International Society of Arboriculture. And this is all not-for-profits. The ISA is a not-for-profit. And get somebody in there, look at the tree. This is also not a real good time to do pruning. You're kind of end of a season. So, right. You know, typically silver maples, they're bleeders, which means you don't usually prune bleeders during the dormant season, which means that you've kind of missed the window of opportunity, in my opinion, to do much pruning on a tree like that.
To do it in the spring or summer? Or?
Actually, mid-summer. Mid-June to middle of August. So, you know, there's still a little bit of room there, depending on how much foliage needs to get taken off. You could still do some late summer pruning.
Yeah, it's not a big rush. I was thinking maybe by next year or something.
Yeah, but I would recommend start with a consult, and then you can, you know, ask a lot of questions, and they're going to spot things, and a consult's real cheap. So in comparison to, you know, having trees taken down or doing things incorrectly.
Thanks, Chuck. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Let's go to Ed in Lee, Massachusetts. Ed.
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for the call. It looks like it's Berkshire County Day.
Well, all right.
I've got a pippin apple tree, probably about 100 years old, that gave up the ghost two nights ago in the thunderstorm. It's kind of hollow in the core. It's loaded this year with apples. 2 years ago, it was loaded. Last year, we only had two apples. This year, we got a ton of apples. It slowly lowered itself to the ground, but it's pretty much detached. Now, should I leave the apples on that tree and see if they will still be nurtured and get sweet? And what about apples that fall off on the ground? Will they sweeten without being on the tree?
Aha.
They could. I'm actually dealing with a similar situation at my own house. This year is really, for the most part, looks like a bumper crop of apples. A lot of trees.
Absolutely.
Really loaded, with the exception of a few that got kind of hit hard in the springtime from some cold temperatures. I've got a tree that's basically bent right over and broke. And
nothing to lose by leaving it it the way it is at this point. I mean, what
yep.
difference would it make? And
yep.
if there's enough vascular system still transmitting fluid, it may be able to ripen up. I'm not sure about the ones on the ground.
Yeah, they might be too early. But the ones that are on the tree, just like Bob said, I think that if you have enough vascular, you got nothing to lose. You got enough vascular tissue to keep them together. The ones at my house, I'll tell you, we tried leaving them, thinking that maybe there'd be enough vascular tissue. And what's happening to the apples? We tried one yesterday, actually, and it's turning really mealy, really dry.
Ooh, nah.
So it's not enough flow. But, yeah. You know, you might have more. It's an older tree. There's a lot more root involved. Mine's a younger tree. So I'd say give it a shot. Check it. And you can do the old taste test. Get out there.
And let us know how you did, Ed. We'd love to know what the success rate was.
All right, Ray, I'll get on your Friday show with the good apples if necessary.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. Over to Kay in Albany. Kay.
Yes, I have a maple tree that needs pruning, and I guess my question was partly answered by previous callers, so if I hurry up, I guess I can still have it pruned.
Yeah, it depends on how much you want to take off. If it's a light pruning this time of year, yeah, but if you do too much pruning at the end of a summer, it can often stimulate late-season growth, and that late season growth is very vulnerable to winter damage. So, you know, it depends on how much. Deadwood can be taken out any time of year. So if it's a deadwood issue, and I always say to people, you know, does it need to be pruned other than deadwood? A lot of times the answer to that is no. It's not just, but then a lot of times it is yes. So.
Okay, and the other question is, a lot of the roots are like poking up above ground, so it's very dangerous to walk under the tree. Is there anything I can do? Is mulching a good idea or not?
Well, you could certainly mulch them. You know, when tree roots are on the surface, they're there because that's where they want to be. They, you know, you can't go in there and bury them with soil. That will hurt the tree.
Yep.
But certainly, a couple of inches of mulch so it's a little easier to work around would be fine.
Yep.
Okay.
They're coming up because roots need air. They need water, but they also need air. And often in soils that are compacted or not great porosity to get air and water in, those roots will tend to come up more. So my guess is that there's probably a soil condition underlying there, and sometimes just some aeration and/or some other treatments.
Certain types of maples are much more prone to that than
That's
others
true.
Anyway.
Yep.
Okay, well, thank you for the advice.
Yep, no more than 3 inches of mulch over those roots.
K, Kay, thank you very much. Number to call on Vox Pop is 1-800-348-2551. It's The Gardening Show today. We're joined by Bob Graves and Fred Breglia. Let's go to Maddie in Gloversville. Maddie.
Hi, it's Betty.
I'm sorry, Betty.
That's fine.
It's okay.
I have a question about transplanting peonies. I don't know if it's the right time of year to do it. I have peonies that I have to transplant from my mother's old garden, and the house has been sold, and I would like to get peonies out of there and into my garden. What should I do?
Okay.
Yeah, you could go ahead and start to move those now. Basically, with perennials, things like that, once their foliage starts to deteriorate, you can start to move them. So whether you did it now or in September, I think I'd like to get it done, you know, either in the next 3 or 4 weeks, rather than waiting till October, November, so they get some chance to root up before winter. But sure, don't be afraid of them. Peonies are pretty hardy things, and you can go in there and split them apart pretty easily.
Okay, and what do I do for fertilizer
Again, as Fred was saying before, a good balanced fertilizer, one of the organics would be good. Something that's complete, that has some micronutrients in it also, would be fine for that. Again, they're not terribly fussy, peonies. The one thing you got to be careful of when you plant them is to not plant them too deep.
That's
Make
right.
sure that they're just at the surface. Otherwise, they won't bloom well for you.
Okay. And would they bloom like next year?
It depends on how small you make the divisions. They might, but they might take a couple of years too.
Uh-huh.
Yep. If you're splitting them, the only point I would say, you know, other than if you're digging them and moving them and leaving them intact, the bulbs, then it's not as much of a critical issue. But if you're going to be dividing them, as Bob said, there's a little basal sort of plate at the bottom. It's sort of where the roots come out of it. And it's very key to, if you're going to be splitting that bulb off, to get a little bit of that that sort of basal plate, which is where the roots are going to come out of. Otherwise, you could lose the division. But otherwise, real straightforward. And the timing is quite good.
Okay.
Thanks, Betty.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye now. Over to Madeline in Rhinebeck. Madeline, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to plant something in front of my windows that would give me some privacy but wouldn't overwhelm the window. So I was looking for something evergreen that doesn't grow more than 4 or 5 feet. And if it does, how can I prune it without topping it?
What direction does the house face? What kind of sun do you get there?
North.
It's north. So is it real shady or a little shady? Or?
No. It has a good portion of sun during the day, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, would it be morning or afternoon, most of the sun?
I would say, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I'm looking at it now and I'm saying, I guess mostly afternoon.
Afternoon, okay. And are you thinking of a broadleaf evergreen like holly or rhododendron, or are you thinking of needled evergreen?
Well, if there was something to do, either one, I'd be happy with. I was thinking of Andromeda, I think it's called.
Andromeda's possible, yeah. They can take a beating in the wintertime. Of course, you're a little bit warmer. Rhinebeck's not too bad. You may want to protect them a little bit in the winter with some burlap the first couple of winters, to wrap them because they'll burn in the winter. But any of the broadleafed evergreens like the Andromeda or hollies or rhodies, boxwood, are all fairly controllable. Or there are varieties, certainly, that are controllable for
and
that.
And what about the needle kinds? Is there anything you would recommend?
Well, you know, the traditional yews are fine. The deer do like to eat them. You're not going to do pines or hemlocks or spruces or things like
right.
that. They're going to get too big.
Is Andromeda deer resistant?
They can eat almost anything that's broadleafed.
It's a broadleaf evergreen, and in the winter, anything that's got, you know, evergreen leaves in the broadleaf family would typically be a little bit more deer candy, I would say.
Right,
but,
right.
And there's a lot of things that would grow to, you know, pretty much the exact height you want. So when we say boxwood, you know, there's a lot of different boxwoods.
Yeah.
So you can get one that would be 3 feet tall. You can get one that will never get more than 2 feet tall. Like Green Gem doesn't get any more than 2 feet ever, no matter how old it gets. Winter Gem, I think, is no more than like 3 feet tall ever. So,
I ask you a very general question? There are a lot of times I go to my local nurseries, which are great, but they don't have all the varieties. Where do you go to get distinct varieties?
Yeah. That's hard. You know, as a nurseryman, you know, we're somewhat limited by the nurseries that we're dealing with.
Right.
But you have much more selection in more unusual things in the spring, because some of those things in this part of the world often come from the West Coast. They come from Oregon and Washington, and we often only get one or two shipments a year from them early. So that might really be a trick would be to go in the spring when new stuff's coming in.
Okay.
Yep, and another trick, too, is if you actually can work with a garden center or nursery and you're after something in particular, a lot of times...
We can order them.
If they know what you want, they're going to get the shipment
good.
In anyways. And
we just add it on.
Just add it on, and you don't get stuck with a lot of extra shipping charges. Yep. You can kind of get that buried into their order, and they certainly wouldn't mind working with you, that's for sure.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for your help.
You got it.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Madeline. We appreciate it. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. So in the nursery business, you will often get shipments from the West Coast?
Every year we get several.
And you can still do that with all the invasive species controls?
Well, you know, you're buying things that are native. Some of them, they're just grown in a climate that's more conducive, so they grow more during the year. It's less expensive often to get some things from the West Coast because they have a longer growing season.
Interesting.
When I worked out in Oregon, we would start budding plants when I got there in the spring, and by the fall we had 6 foot tall trees.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's
faster growth.
That is cost efficient. Let's take a break. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Back with the Gardening Show and Bob Graves and Fred Breglia in a moment.
Support comes from Landis Arboretum, Esperance, New York. Announcing fall plant benefits September 19th and 20th, landisarboretum.org, made possible by the Montgomery County Occupancy Tax, administered by the Montgomery County Board of Supervisors. Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston. Rhinebeckart.com. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. And Saratoga Saddlery, Saratoga Springs, New York, an equestrian lifestyle boutique featuring cowboy boots by Lucchese and Ariat for women, men, and kids on Facebook and saratogasaddlery.com. And Adam Ross Cut Stone, Albany, New York, providing an array of natural stone for outdoor patios, walkways, retaining walls, pools, and home entertaining. AdamRossCutStone.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, The Gardening Show. And boy, it's going fast. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia are here. Ray Graff, your host. And tomorrow, don't forget, it's a Food Friday. You know what? It's about ice cream tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's going to be a good day for me.
Good day.
Very good day. You know what? That means no breakfast, no lunch for me. Just stock up on ice cream. It's pretty good. All right, let's go back to the phones. And David in Brunswick. David.
Howdy. I have two quick questions. One is about burning bush. I have 5 dwarf burning bushes that I've had here for at least 12 years or more, and they've survived harsh winters and snowstorms and ice storms and what appears to be a once-a-year-in-the-winter attack by deer. They've generally done very well. However, the 2 tallest, which are about 4 feet, are starting to show some dead branches. One of them, I did some pruning of the smallest, obvious dead branches last summer. And this year, pretty much the top of it is almost bare except for one main branch. And the other one has foliage on the bottom and on the top, but it's a little bare in the middle. Friends who I know who have a full-size burning bush, I've seen them just eviscerate them, and they seem to pop back. So I'm wondering if it's too late in the season for this one bush that now is about half dead, if I should cut that down to the live growth, which is about a foot or foot and a half off the ground, and hope it comes back next year.
Well, I'll tell you from experience that burning bush, although it is an incredibly tough plant and can grow in almost any condition, you get the roots in the ground and the green side up and it usually lives. does not like rejuvenation pruning. So when you do a real hard cutback with those, I have not seen good results with them coming back. I'm not saying it can't, but something like and also timing is critical with rejuvenation. This is not the time to
this
do
is
rejuvenation
not the time, yeah.
pruning.
Spring would be it, I guess.
Yeah, prior to bud break. Like if you took a really old lilac that was really overgrown in the springtime prior to bud break and you cut that thing right to the ground, it'll give you a brand new shrub that season without flowers, of course. You lose in bloom. But
that's another issue, so I should wait until spring to cut down some very tall, old lilacs.
Yeah, buds are swelling, but they haven't opened yet, and that's your good time. But the times that I've seen burning bush treated like that, 90% of the time they do not come back.
Interestingly enough, in two cases I've seen, I guess, with I don't know what they call it, full-size burning bush or regular burning bush, I've seen them cut back many, many times, pruned, and they seem to bounce back fuller and fuller each time. So it's bizarre. Maybe
you
it's
have,
climate.
You have nothing to lose here.
It's true. On the one, I have nothing to lose.
You have nothing to lose.
The other question is this. Some years back, these plants started appearing in a small garden in my backyard, and I discovered it was bamboo, and I thought it was a rather handsome plant in the beginning. I thought, oh, this is kind of nice, and in the fall it is appealing, et cetera. Well, then I realized that it's an incredibly invasive species.
Sounds like Japanese knotweed.
They call it bamboo, and it looks like bamboo. But
big
it's a
leaves?
Very, it's a very soft, yeah, very soft, hollow branches in the spring, or in the fall, rather, that you can snap off.
Dig it out and keep digging.
Well, I dug as best I could. I've got some very rocky soil here, and I've been waging a four-year war. And here's the good news, I hope and think, that after eviscerating most of it and digging up what I could, every year, daily, for the last 2 years, I've been pulling up any shoots that come up.
Yep.
And this year, it's been a minimal number of shoots and small leaves that have popped up.
Yep.
So I'm guessing maybe I'm winning the war.
It sounds like you are.
Keep doing that.
Yep.
These things, that they'll grow out of shade out from underneath a shed.
they
appear to need green leaves for photosynthesis. Yeah. They just keep going and going.
They're tough ones.
They'll grow out of the middle of blacktop.
Okay. Yeah. I'm hopeful because this summer sometimes only once or twice a week I'll go out, and I've been pulling everything up. So I'm assuming next year there'll be very few, and then finally I've...
You're doing the right thing.
Yeah, you're definitely doing the right thing. So just don't ease up now that you've almost won the battle. Keep it going until it's over.
Thanks, David. We appreciate the call. Well, in Del Mar, legend has it, somebody planted those many, many years ago.
People come into the store and ask us for them sometimes.
I'm going to tell you something. We bought our house almost 13 years ago, and we're still fighting
the battle.
God, we thought we had it won. They come back. They never leave.
You can also go to the Cornell website for Japanese knotweed, and they've got some instructions there as to about how to take care of that, too.
All right. Well, I guess it's just a constant battle, right?
Keep pulling them out. I'm doing the same thing at the Arboretum. We have a few patches where we had some fill brought in. And in with that fill was the Japanese knotweed. And that's the only area we have it. But, you know, we've been after it, too. And, you know, we're winning the war. But it was well established when I got at it. So it's taking a while.
On the other hand, if my lawn keeps dying, maybe that's all I'll have left. So let's go to George in Middletown. George.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I have one question. I have a couple of giant blue spruces on my property that have been there forever, and they're starting, they're dying from the bottom up.
Yep. There's two main reasons why the blue spruces will die. One of them is Cytospora canker, which is probably not what you have, and the other one is the needle cast disease, which is probably what you have. And you'll know if it's needle cast because you'll see that the way that the branches die is that all the foliage along the entire branch dies except for the very end first.
Uh-huh.
So you'll have tufts of growth at the end, but everything internal is gone. And then eventually the branch dies, and then it'll go to the next one, and you'll start to see all this sort of interior growth dying with just leaving tufts of growth at the end.
We're seeing a lot of this the last few years.
It has been way more prolific around here.
They say it's weather-related.
I'm sorry. There's nothing to do, right?
Well, the only way to really... to keep that, is to keep the tree healthy before it, gets it, preventative.
Okay.
But once it has it, it's a spray program to control it.
It's hard on big trees because they're hard to spray, but there is a chemical for it.
Yep, it is treatable via a spray program. Unfortunately, it's something that you're going to have to reapply more than once probably, maybe annually till you get control and then kind of take it from there. The other one is Cytospora canker, and if you had that, you would see oozing sap on the actual trunk itself. And not the same kind of sparse branches that I talked about with the tufts on the end.
What we're seeing mostly is that needle cast.
That needle cast.
You drive down the road, you're seeing it everywhere.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
All righty. Well, thanks
for the call.
With this.
Thanks, George. And over to Sue in Boston Spa. Hiya, Sue. You're on.
Hi. I have two questions. The first one is moles, I think. I had these beautiful bloom flowers. I don't know what else they are, but they're a very pretty, tall, purple flower. And all of a sudden they've stopped blooming, but all of a sudden they've started chewing, and they just come right out of the root. And I don't know if they're moles or what. I don't know what to do.
I think they're probably not moles, but voles with
That's
a
right.
V.
Voles. Uh-huh.
Voles. Yeah, moles eat mostly earthworms, honestly. They don't eat a lot of roots. They can, but they don't usually. But voles are strictly herbivorous. They eat roots. They eat bark. And they will, the plants will literally just topple over because the roots are gone.
Yeah, this is what's happening.
And there are repellents that you can put around for those, or you can trap or use bait stations. But they can do a lot of damage. You want to look up voles and see the various options.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
And they have.
So what would be a a killer that you could use?
Cats, feral cats work really well. Don't feed them filet mignon, just. Give them the basic diet, and so they go out there and hunt.
There's some vole repellents that are organic materials. There are various oils and castor oil and things like that.
Yep. Mouse traps work.
And
too.
Mouse traps work.
Yep. With peanut butter.
Peanut butter.
Yep, that just like you would for a mouse. The vole will go for the same.
Well,
thing.
How many voles would be in an average yard? How many mouse traps will you need?
There can be a lot of them.
Yeah, there could be a lot. Look for the holes. The holes, are pretty evident.
Particularly if you have any stonework, stone walls, patios, brickwork. They like to live in and around stonework. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck, Sue. We appreciate the
call. Okay, I have another part that I mentioned.
Oh, excellent.
The treatment or removal of vines such as the Virginia creeper.
Oh, boy.
Kudzu, I know that's almost impossible. And then if you have some poison ivy.
And you want to know how to remove them?
I want to know, do you have to just, can you just pull them up from the roots, the Virginia creeper?
Well, one way to get rid of things is to continue to cut. And, especially in the springtime, after, if you think about how plants function, they leaf out due to stored energy. And they don't photosynthesize initially. They, literally stored energy leafs out all deciduous plants, all plants. So, in that case, if you cut it right after it leaves out, it used up so much of its resources to put on the first set of leaves. Don't let it start to photosynthesize. Cut it right then. And
Keep cutting.
Keep cutting at that point on. You'll get a little bit of regrowth. But if you cut it at the wrong time of year, you could sometimes multiply things.
So, uh-huh. Yep. Just keep.
Yeah. And is there anything, I pull the kudzu off. I've talked to you about it before, but I pull the kudzu vine off of, say, a pine tree or whatever. And is there anything other than to just, I know you can't really get the major root, I guess, but is there anything else you can do?
Well, same thing. You just keep pulling it down and cutting it off and pulling it down and cutting it off and weakening the underground structure.
Okay.
Yeah, and eventually it wears out.
Thanks, Sue. We appreciate the call. Scott in Santisfield, Massachusetts. Scott.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Nice to have you here.
Thank you for taking my call.
All right.
I got a question about sumac. I have been battling sumac for years. Yep. Is there a way to, down in Santisfield here, it's very rocky.
Yep.
So I try to get the root as far as I can, but.
Cutting, like we had mentioned before.
A bulldozer and a backhoe helps.
I've had really good luck at the Arboretum, though. When I first started, I remember in 1998, there was a huge problem with sumac in a lot of the areas that they couldn't mow. And, again, just timing a lot of this with how a plant functions. It leaves out in the spring from stored energy. Wait till it leaves out. Cut it right then and there. It's going to send up some weak secondary growth. Cut it again, and I've had very easy time getting rid of sumac that way.
Yeah, but it's the timing.
It's timing.
As Fred says here, it's really important.
Yeah, because you could be sitting there cutting it all summer long, You know, right on through into the fall, because it just keeps getting energy and keeps growing. But if you do it after the stored energy is used up in the spring, leaves out through the stored energy, there's very little energy left in that root system before the leaves get a chance to photosynthesize, whack it down, and then watch for regrowth. As soon as that regrowth comes, hit it again, and you know, a couple, two or three cuts, you should really, 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 I'd be surprised if you cannot control that sumac without by using that method.
All right. Well, here's the other thing is I really like sumac. I think it's very a nice-looking plant.
So, actually, I do, too. It's a great ecological plant. It's a great wildlife plant, and an unbelievable amount of birds use it to get through the winter. So does poison ivy, actually.
Ah, well, have some of that, then.
Yep. Poison ivy is another really good wildlife plant, you know, when it grows in a spot where it's okay.
Terrific.
So, if you don't need to cut the sumac, I would recommend leaving it.
Or
if
leave certain areas.
Or some. Yeah.
All right, Scott, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Lily in Galway. Lily.
Hello. I have a very quick question about powdery mildew, which has devastated our squash plants.
Yeah.
And, well, no one's crying over the lack of zucchini.
They've had enough, haven't they?
Yeah, we've had enough zucchini. But my pumpkin plants, I really would like to somehow bring them back, or at least prevent the spread of the powdery mildew. Now, we have used the neem oil in all the directions, but it really hasn't done anything. We kept the beds weeded. We have a good breeze from the hill behind our house. But
it's really hard to control mildew once you've got it. It's almost impossible. There are some other organic fungicides, but as with all fungicides, so they're organic or not, you need to apply it before you see the problem. So it's almost too late this year. I mean, you could certainly try it this year. But the thing to do is next year, before you see anything at all, start using it and use it routinely prior to the onset.
Yep.
Well, it's our first year gardening with sort of any gusto, so we'll know next year to treat, because it was
live
a few
learn.
Spots,
yep.
And then overnight it was just
killed
my cucumbers.
You know, another real quick trick, I know we're running out of time.
Yeah,
but
we are.
A quick trip is sometimes, and again, it's not going to completely control it by any means, but if you get a hose and you forcefully blast off the leaves, it'll reduce the amount of powdery mildew you have on the leaves. It'll actually, it's a lot of funguses. You don't really want to think about water, but sometimes powdery mildew comes from not so much water, but actually sometimes drier environments with moisture, humidity, and that's what we've been seeing. So blast it with a garden hose. Do it early, not late in the day.
And then, you know, sauté the zucchini. It's delicious.
we've done 100. We're keeping track of all the recipes.
Rest of zucchini soup.
Well, thanks, Lily. We appreciate the call.
Fried up some eggs.
Thank you so much.
I know. All right, very quickly to Betty in Pittsfield. Betty, you have about a minute here.
Hi, my question's about pine trees. And I have 11 that need to come down. I live in a ranch. They're twice as tall as my house. And you had mentioned trees are good. Is that .com, .gov?
It's .com, and it's a site that's put out by the International Society of Arboriculture. And on that site, you can find a whole bunch of consumer information on mulching, pruning, et cetera. But you can also find a list of certified arborists. And before you start to take them down, that's a huge job, and that's not going to be a cheap job. So I would always recommend starting with a consultation from a certified arborist. You might be surprised that a lot of those trees may not have to come down depending on what that consult, but you know, start with a certified arborist consult and then go from there.
Thanks, Betty. All right, a couple of quick emails here. This is from, this is a good one. This is from Amanda in Belchertown. We're having a large outdoor cookout, 100 people this weekend. Better to mow before or afterwards?
Better to mow. Why?
You know, I deal with this because of wedding prep at the arboretum and stuff like that. And, if you wait, ideally before, about a week before.
Yeah.
Because if you go too close to the event, then everyone's got it all over their shoes.
So it
depends on how tall it is. But, you know, ideally a week, 5 days before, you're definitely in good shape.
Right,
5 days
before. That's my favorite question so far. All right. Yep, this is very quickly. We only have about 30 seconds here. This is from Joel from Port Jervis. This year I grew red onions from sets. They didn't really grow very big. Some are about the size or a little bigger than a ping pong ball. Couple a little smaller than a pool ball. My question is, can I keep these over the winter and replant them next spring as sets, or should I just eat them now?
Boy, reds don't keep particularly well over the winter. I think I'd go ahead and enjoy those and then start over in the spring.
All right.
Yeah, they're not one that holds really well.
Well, I guess we're about out of time, but thank you to Fred Breglia and Bob Graves, and don't forget, Fred, bring the guitar.
right.
to the gig and sit in with Mark Emanation. It'll be a great show. Support comes from HMT at the Spa Little Theater, beginning their 31st season with a Chorus Line. Weekends October 9th through 25th at the Spa Little Theater, Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. Colby Attorney's Service, Corporate Formations, Document Retrieval Services, Court Filings, and Legal Publishing for the legal and professional community since 1939, colbyservice.com. Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services at a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, boydenandperrin.com. And Carrie Haddad Gallery, Hudson, New York, presenting Paper, a mixed media exhibit exploring paper and its possibilities. Opening reception with artists this Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. Open daily 11 to 5. CarrieHaddadGallery.com. Thanks again for listening today. Thanks for all the great calls and emails. We love it. We love your participation in this program. Thanks to Bob Graves of Fatigan's. And I won't spell it for you because that'll take another 20 minutes. But you can find it with a quick Google search. Bob Graves and Fred Breglia, thanks, guys. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who was at the controls. Your phones were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein. Marshall, I'm Ray Graff. And as I mentioned, tomorrow it's Food Friday, and it's ice cream. That's all I got to say. It's ice cream.